Hey Caffeinators, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. The Vet Tech Cafe is a podcast centered around veterinary technicians and nurses, hosted by myself, Dave Cowan, and my good friend Jeff Backus. We strive to discuss current issues facing our profession and give our colleagues a voice and a medium to enter into these discussions. Our guests are experts in the veterinary field that we hope can help our listeners work towards dealing with these issues, as well as coming up with solutions that can lead to change. If you have a question, comment, or would like to be a guest on the Vet Tech Cafe, please contact us at vettechcafe@gmail.com, or you can find us at our website, vettechcafe.com. One thing we would ask of you, our listeners, is to rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. We're not exactly sure how or why this helps us, but apparently it does. So without further ado, come on in, grab yourself a cup of coffee, and get ready for another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe.
Hello, Caffeinators. Welcome back to the Vet Tech Cafe. Happy 2023, wherever you are. The Vet Tech Cafe, where the heated upstairs balcony is reserved for veterinary technician appreciation parties only. There will be no other guests allowed up there. We would like to thank all of our Caffeinators as we start out in 2023 for your continued support and getting our merchandise, which you can find on our website, vettechcafe.com. And honestly, you can even go to Printify and kind of design some of your own. If this is your first time here, welcome. Please check out all of our channels, our YouTube channel, Facebook, Instagram. Again, you can find out more about Dave and I on vettechcafe.com, our bios, all of that. If you have any, you know, unique or interesting episode ideas, feel free to reach out to us on all of
like today's.
Just like today's episode on any of those platforms. You can send us a DM, whether it's something you specifically want to talk about or if you have somebody in mind you would like us to discuss something in particular with. Please don't hesitate to reach out, because honestly, as we've, I think, well established, we obviously don't know everybody in this field or everything everybody is doing. And some of those episodes have been our favorite episodes because they're things we would have never even thought to cover. So please don't hesitate.
And I think our next like three or four episodes are all going to be those types of things.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And they always really become fascinating discussions. So please don't hesitate to reach out if you have any ideas. Dave, what's on your mind? Any New Year's resolutions?
I don't really do resolutions because, you know, I do like everyone does. Like, oh, I want to work out more.
Sure.
I want to be healthier and all that stuff. And by January 10th or 12th, I haven't gone to the gym in 3 days, mm-hmm. and I feel terrible about it. So I try not to do stuff like that just because I know myself.
Right.
I know I have these big lofty aspirations of doing all these great things, and then I feel terrible about myself when I don't accomplish them.
Right.
So, you know, just kind of general things about being organized, being more proactive about my own mental health and things like that.
Yeah.
But nothing like I used to. In the past, I used to have this whole list of things that I wanted to accomplish for the year. And for those of you listening, it's amazing to have goals. I encourage everyone to have goals. But for me, I just try to have more general ideas because I know if I set these lofty goals, I'm just not going to do it. And I'm gonna feel terrible about
it.
So
right.
Nothing too crazy.
Gotcha.
What about you guys?
You know, I kind of along the same lines, I mentioned this to you before we came on air. One thing I am trying to do, at least the first couple of days, is unsubscribe to the numerous spam emails that we all get that, you know, that I'm not going to read, that I end up just deleting. I just unsubscribed to one from Pep Boys and one from, you know, like a scrubs company. I don't wear scrubs anymore. So, you know, just two or three of those a day that I can keep my inbox decluttered a little bit and just delete less emails. And, you know, now with the unsubscribe link, a lot of times you don't even have to go to their website to do it. You can just click the thing and be done with it. And so it's not really a resolution. It's something I've done a few times in the past and it's really helped. And I kind of stopped doing it for a little while. So the last couple of days I've been trying to get back to that. But otherwise, like you said, you know, it's not going to be a daily thing where I, you know, eat better or exercise more or what have you, but just trying to at least be conscientious about some of those things and maybe not have hot dogs for lunch and pizza for dinner. But, you know, we'll see how it goes.
So you have hot dogs for lunch or pizza for dinner?
Exactly. Yes. Maybe one, okay. one day okay. and yeah. then one the next, you know, or, yeah. or whatever, however it works out. So, well, we've got a really cool episode lined up today, kind of along the same lines as we alluded to kind of in our intro about, you know, reaching out to us with episode ideas. We have Sandra Tucker coming by the Vet Tech Cafe today. She reached out to us about doing an episode on disability and accessibility in veterinary hospitals. She's a currently a vet tech student with Penn Foster. We're going to talk a little bit about that. She initially kind of wanted to go right into a veterinary technician program into high school, kind of pivoted, went different direction and got into elementary education and paralegal, and is now working her way back into veterinary medicine. And like I said, is in Penn Foster, started there in 2017, into the third semester of four there. And we'll be starting at a clinic kind of here in the new year, which will be her first job in a clinic setting outside of her externship. So we're going to talk kind of all about that. I'm really excited to have this discussion. So Sandra, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. First of all, I know you've been listening for a while. We really appreciate the support. What can we get you for a cup of coffee or caffeinated beverage of choice?
I'm not big on coffee, but if I do drink coffee, it is just regular coffee with a lot of peppermint mocha creamer.
Ooh,
oh,
nice.
Man, you are speaking Jeff's
language. Absolutely. I'm actually enjoying a cup of, well, they call it candy cane, but it's peppermint coffee. It's black coffee, but it's peppermint flavored, and it is absolutely delicious. It's a cool, drizzly, dreary day here in Southern California, so it's a perfect cup of coffee for this morning. So if you don't mind, take us through your career path and kind of what got you into veterinary medicine, what you're working on now. I think you're going to kind of have a unique perspective on these first couple of questions as you're in a technician program right now. A lot of times we talk to people that have been in the field like Dave and I for long, long periods of time, but I'm really interested to hear your perspective on first your career path, what got you into it, what you maybe want to accomplish or what, you know, looking forward, where you're headed. And we'll talk more about that later as well, but take us through that if you don't mind.
Okay. So like most people that go into veterinary medicine, I've always really loved animals. Wanted to be a vet tech ever since I was a little girl when I used to watch, I don't know if y'all remember that show Emergency Vets that used to come on Animal Planet.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I realized
that Colorado.
Yeah. And I realized that the vet techs did most of the work with the animals. So that's what drew me to the career. And I was going to enroll in the local community college's vet tech program right out of high school. I did the observation hours that they required beforehand, and which was really interesting. The veterinarian would do surgery sitting down so I could see the surgeries from my wheelchair.
Oh, okay.
And then when I got my observation hours completed, I went to turn in my application and meet with the veterinary technician that was in charge of the program, and she informed me they would only take applications for people that they were 100% certain could complete the program, and she did not feel that I would meet the qualifications, so she wouldn't accept my application.
Okay.
So after that, I tried the elementary education path. That didn't really draw my focus. Then I tried paralegal. That was just outright boring. So I quit college altogether until 2017 when I seen an ad for Penn Foster. And I'm like, they won't know that I'm in a wheelchair because they can't see me at all. So I enrolled in their program and I finished my first externship back in January. And well, this January, I'm hoping to be starting at a clinic in the next town over from me as a volunteer. And yeah.
All right. And so you mentioned that they didn't think that you would be able to meet the qualifications and get all the way through the course. Did they? My first part of my question, I guess, is, you know, you doing the observation hours, did they ever kind of give you that inclination that would be a concern before you started that? Or is that something you kind of took on your own? And then what specifically was it that they thought you wouldn't be, why they thought you wouldn't be able to get all the way through?
They required that you do the observation hours before you even apply to the vet tech program. So
okay.
I went ahead and did that
Got it.
On my own so that I could turn them in and get right into the program. And
I see.
When I met with her, she's like, well, I don't think that you'll be able to do this program because you're in a wheelchair. Things are not going to be easy for you. We only have 20 spots available, and we're going to give those to people who have a higher chance of completing the program. So, yeah, after that, I didn't really ask many questions. I just
sure.
left.
Okay.
Understood.
I was going to say, did they give you a reason of why they thought you wouldn't be able to complete it? I mean, I can imagine prior restraint techniques are difficult for you, but did they give you any other reason as to why they thought you wouldn't be able to do that?
Because she did not feel that I would be able to get my wheelchair into a field to do the work with the cows and horses.
Ah, okay.
Even though I grew up running around fields with my cousins.
And you didn't have any aspirations of like working in large animal, right?
Or, no.
You? Okay. So, I mean, I guess they do require
yeah.
you are required to go through that route, however.
Yeah, but they have the many animals that I can use for those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's very true. Yeah.
So, you know, just kind of jumping into, you know, your career path and kind of where you're at right now. Most of the people we interview, like Jeff said, have been in the field for, you know, 5, 10, 15, I think we had one that was 40 years in the practice. And we don't really get many opportunities to talk to somebody that's just starting out. So what is your impression of the veterinary technician profession right now? Obviously, you know, if you are going through this process, you've got a pretty positive outlook on it, I would imagine, because you're still going for it. So how do you see the profession right now?
Probably with all the wide-eyed enthusiasm of someone who yeah. has not had much experience this far. To
yeah.
me, it has just always been a dream of mine, and I don't really see anything bad in the profession this far, other than, of course, my own issues with it. Because of the disability, but for the most part, everybody has been really nice. Some may feel that I am not able to do it, but I have been picking heavy animals up my entire life. I have a 60-pound pit bull that is terrified to get in the bathtub most of the time, so I have to put her in it. I live alone. There's no one else going to do it for me.
And does that get like... just kind of going back to why they said you wouldn't be able to complete that. Was that ever brought up? Like, I have a big dog. I am able to do some of these things.
It was, but she just didn't want to take a chance on me.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Not finishing the program and
yeah.
knocking someone else out of the program who was actually able to walk.
Yeah. And I know, I mean, it's a unfortunate or maybe the wrong way to do it, but I know, you know, Dave, you could probably even speak to this with the program you taught at, like so much of it has to be pass rate and, you know, those that,
yeah.
that not only complete the program, but pass the examination and get their certification. Like, you know, some of that has to be met. And I think that, you know, from my teaching experience, I taught at an alternate route program here in California, kind of along the same lines. Like we had to make sure a certain percentage of our students were passing, and not because they, I can't even recall a time, I'm sure that there was that we had an applicant with a disability that maybe we were concerned about, but just the students alone that were, you know, are you putting in enough study time? Are you doing this, that, or the other? So much of that had to be because we had to keep up certain statistics. And, you know, if you're talking about a program with 20 people, you already kind of know a certain percentage of those 20 people, even if they're your best 20 students, they're going to struggle. They just are. And
yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's a crappy situation to be in, but I guess that's, I don't know, from a certification kind of standpoint with the boards or the organizations that certify the programs, that's just kind of where we're at.
Well, I think it's very dependent on the school as well. Obviously I don't know the school Sandra was going to, but the school that I was at, we were one vet tech program in, you know, the school that oversaw us had many schools across the country, but we were the only vet tech program. And I think they just did not understand the attrition of students. And they say, why are we losing so many students? And well, because the program is hard and it's supposed to be hard. And they were blown away when we told them, guess what? When these students get out into the field, Sandra, don't listen to this. but in five to six years, you know, 25 to 50% of them are not going to be in the field anymore.
Right.
And that was like a mind-blowing thing to them of like, well, what are we doing wrong? Like, it's the profession. It's not something we're doing wrong.
Right.
But it is something that the schools do look at to say we need to have good pass rates and all that stuff, which – I mean, as a teacher, I honestly did not care about that.
Right. So, you know, Sandra, you, from your perspective, and you're, you know, halfway or maybe a little bit past in Penn Foster and kind of starting out with externships and kind of getting acclimated to clinic life, curious what you maybe see as the biggest obstacle in our profession right now, if you've come across any, you know, whether it be the hospital environment itself or the education path, what have you come across that you think is a big obstacle or maybe one you see down the road, and any ideas you may have or things that we could do differently to address that?
Okay. Well, I am partial to the disability issue.
Sure.
But if I had to pick the biggest issue, simply from listening to all of your podcasts and what everyone else has said, title protection, because you cannot properly utilize your techs and pay them the money they deserve if just anyone can call themselves a tech.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Amen. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Agreed.
And I think so much falls in line after, I think a lot of dominoes fall after title protection in terms of utilization, in terms of pay, all the other things that we talk about really ad nauseum and seemingly every episode. I think title protection is one of the very first dominoes that has to fall. And I think partly to a unified title as part of the title protection, that's got to be a cornerstone that I think helps a lot of those other things come into shape.
Well, it's one of the hardest things to police, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, unless somebody puts it on their website or puts it in an ad, there's really not a whole lot you can do. Like, if they do that internally, that doesn't get out to the public for the most part. So it's one of the hardest things, I think, to actually tackle is that title protection.
Yeah, I live in Tennessee, and I think we're the only ones with the LMVT.
The LVMT. Yeah. And you know, it's I don't know. I mean, there's something to be said for different titles. I mean, obviously, on the veterinarian side, if you graduate from UPenn, you are a VMD instead of a DVM. So, I guess there is some precedent for that.
The UK is. What's the UK? DMV?
No, I think they're MRCBS or something like they have something.
I forget.
Something completely different. And I get that. That's that's RVN versus RVT or what have you.
Right.
But like in the US, you know, state to state, I think there needs to be a little bit more uniformity there. I absolutely. But again, I think title protection. Like here in California, we have title protection, but there's zero enforcement. And we need to get to a point where, you know, the Veterinary Medical Board can send notices to practices and they can fine practices. And whenever you renew your practice permit, you have to pay more dollars because on your website, you are calling your staff veterinary nurses or veterinary technicians when they're assistants or like, I mean, that's honestly what it's going to take. We can holler till the sun goes down as veterinary technicians, but like there's going to have to be some enforcement from somebody and that's going to have to come from way above us, unfortunately. And you're absolutely right about title protection.
Yeah. Even in Tennessee where it's more, I guess, closely regulated or supposed to be, there are vet clinics that still say that some of their staff are veterinary technicians. They don't put the license part in front of it, but they still call them veterinary technicians, even if they're not, even if they don't have proper credentials.
Right. And, you know, to some of this, I mean, obviously it's very easy to say this is on the veterinarians and the practice owners and things of that sort. But to some degree, like we have to absolve them of some of that as well, because that's something that they're not taught in school. It's something that like, unless somebody actually educates them on that, they're not going to know that. That's not part of their responsibility. I think that comes to the state vet tech associations to say, hey, these are the rules, these are the laws, this is what we call ourselves, this is what, you know, this is when you can use the terminology and when you can't, and actually helping to educate those practice managers or practice owners, because again, like, to some degree, that's not their responsibility to just know that. They have to be told those kinds of things. But again, there has to be some level of accountability to that. Like, if you have that knowledge and you continue to do so, then there has to be a penalty for that, or it's just never going to change. And that's got to come from the veterinary medical boards or what have you.
Yeah. No, and I think to some degree, there has to be some type of financial component to it, because a lot of times these practice owners and veterinarians don't see it unless there's some type of financial benefit to doing the right thing,
right.
Which, you know, that's a whole other discussion.
maybe we'll save that for a tap room.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a tap room discussion. So Sandra, you mentioned in your emails to us and discussing why you wanted to come on our show is that the veterinary field sees disability as being equal to incapability, and you're helping to end that stigma. So are there any particular challenges in a clinic setting for you that you found surprising, or those that would be very difficult that really aren't?
Some of the biggest challenges that I have faced in the clinic that were surprising were mostly to do with people's perception of disabled.
Yeah.
Because I am in a wheelchair, people often also think that means that I am mentally incapable. I don't know where that correlation came from, but a lot of people think that those two are connected. And a lot of times clients were afraid that my wheelchair would scare their animals and did not want me around their pets, which that is their prerogative to pick and choose what people they want working on their animals. But I'm just here to say that being in a wheelchair does not mean that you are less than capable than anyone else. I've been pushing my wheelchair up hills and lifting my weight with my arms my entire life. I think I'm somewhat better qualified to restrain animals than most people.
and probably better suited to judge your own limitations, or, you know, what it is, you know, you can and can't do than anybody else would be.
Oh, yes. I know what I am capable of doing and what I'm not, and I will gladly tell anyone if there is a task that I'm not equipped to handle. I also found that while working in the clinic, it was challenging to do to review microscope slides, because counter that they had the microscopes on were about chest level with me, because I'm sitting down. So I would have to use my hands to hold myself up to look in the microscope slides when the vet techs wanted me to look at something they thought was interesting. And stuff like that's easily resolved. I mean, if you're going to have someone in a wheelchair working in your clinic, really all you have to do to find what is inconvenient for them is to just roll around in one of those roller chairs. You'll see what we can reach and what we can't.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, you bring up the microscope idea. I feel like that's a fairly easy to remedy thing, in that if you have a tray you can bring the microscope down onto to see, you know, have it at your appropriate eye level, or, you know, I feel like some of these things, obviously in veterinary clinics, we've just, again, the old adage, we've done it this way for however long. You just have to think about outside the box a little bit. And I feel like that's a fairly easy remedy. And maybe some of these other things are too, these preconceived notions that, you know, oh, it won't work because of this, or it won't work because of that. There probably are pretty easy solutions. I feel like that if they just asked you and discussed it with you, probably would be pretty easy to remedy. Yeah.
Oh yeah. The ADA is the vet tech student's best friend if you have disabilities for doing your externships, because they will work with you to help you find solutions.
Okay.
If any of your listeners are students who have disabilities, I greatly encourage them to reach out to their school's ADA.
Okay. Okay. We'll,
give us links to that.
If you have a link or website, we'll definitely share that in the show notes, because those are the exact kind of things that we absolutely love to share. And again, I feel like there are probably a lot of people who, just like you early in your career, have been kind of roadblocked out. That, and I, Dave, we talk about this all the time. It's 2023 now. I feel like there not only are more opportunities, but there is more sharing of information, sharing of resources than there ever has been in our field. And I feel like more so than certainly when we started out, we have ways to bring people back that have been interested in and told no. And I think this is a great example.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and just to go back to the microscope thing, I mean, Jeff, you're not clinical anymore, and I do relief, so I'm in a lot of clinics all the time. I would say probably half the clinics I work in have a microscope that has a digital screen on top of it, so that, like, there's no reason why you can't look at that and be just as efficient as any other technician. Not to dwell on the one topic, but
And, you know, so aside from the microscope one that you brought up, any other specific examples you can kind of relay that you've come across that, it, again, you know, might be seen as this big deal, but just really is not?
Yeah. People often thought that I wouldn't be able to lift, because I think the maximum you had to be able to lift up onto an exam table was 49 pounds. For the program, and even the techs that were working there, even though they had known me because I did my externship at the same site that I did my observations at years before, even some of them didn't think that I would be able to do that. But there was this big Bernedoodle that one of the doctors owned, and I'm like, hey, can I borrow your dog? He's like, sure. Yeah. And I just chucked it up on that table like it wasn't anything.
Well, I hope moving forward for you, you know, the perceptions of, you know, not being able to lift things and not being able to do certain things, hopefully with your attitude and your perseverance, you're going to prove them all wrong, which I think is something that you have the ability to do, you know, and it's going to be something simple, like give me that dog and I'll put it up there.
That is definitely my goal. I love to prove people wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's the best way to do it, is to just tell me I can't do something and I'm going to do it. So, you know, not like defiantly, but like say I'm not capable of doing something and proving that you can. I think that's going to be the best thing for you.
Yeah.
Why don't we take our lead break here, about almost 30 minutes in. Why don't we take our little quick break here, and then we'll get back to some more questions for you, okay?
Okay.
The Vet Tech Cafe is sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp online therapy will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist, and you can start communicating in under 48 hours.
It's not a crisis line, and it's not self-help. It's professional therapy done securely online that's more affordable than traditional in-person therapy, and financial aid is available.
Caffeinators receive 10% off the first month using betterhelp.com/vettechcafe. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, to join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your therapist, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy.
Don't take our word for it. Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily at betterhelp.com/reviews. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/reviews.
If you want to take charge of your mental health, visit betterhelp.com/vettechcafe and get started today and get 10% off your first month. Be well, caffeinators. Welcome back to the Vet Tech Cafe, everybody, where we do accept care credit as payment. I'm not sure how many months you're going to need to pay off your coffees here, but
we'll, you have 6 months interest free.
You get 6 months interest free to pay back for your coffee. Sandra, we just had our ad for BetterHelp, and one of the questions we always like to ask coming out of the break is, how do you manage your mental health? Obviously, you may have some different challenges with your mental health than the rest of our guests will have. So how do you kind of get through your day and manage your own mental health?
My dogs. I take them for walks. I play with them. Sometimes they just pile up on the couch with me or the bed, and just, that's how I manage it. They're my biggest supporters. And
I've often said there's nothing that will make you forget a terrible day than coming home and seeing a dog so happy to see you when you walk in the door.
Oh, yeah. My dogs act completely goofy every time I come home, even if I'm gone just 5 minutes. So it, like, just brightens my whole day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For
good. That's
for
awesome.
For me, it's I'm obviously more of a cat person than a dog person. I do love dogs. I just don't have any right now because of our apartment. But for me, it's the cat purr. Like when they jump up on your lap and they start purring when you pet them, it's like my blood pressure comes down 20 points. I can just feel it. Yeah, totally
I
get
think
it.
there was a study that actually proved that cat purrs lower blood pressure.
Yeah, I've seen that, and I can definitely attest to or vouch for that. So, you know, you mentioned the clinic you did your externship at that you're going to be going back to here shortly, and I'm curious, how have you found, you know, that particular clinic, but also veterinary staff to be accommodating to your needs or willing to work with, you know, what you need or make those changes. You know, obviously we talked about the microscope. Like, how have you found that to be? And I think particularly I'm more curious about veterinary staff because I can see myself 20 years ago being one of those people that is, you know, just like, what are we doing here? Like, and now I look back and I can't believe that I would be that person, but honestly, I think I was probably one of those toxic people that would have that opinion. But I'm curious, like, how you have found that so far. Like, hospital staff, like, how have they received you? How have they, you know, how has accommodation been going?
Well, at the clinic that I did my externship at, they were very accommodating, always willing to help me in any way I needed. But I did not receive that same welcome when I started putting in job applications at clinics. And it basically boils down to the fact if you have someone with a disability and then you have someone with the same qualifications who can walk, most of the time, they're going to go for the person who they don't have to accommodate for. So, when I found the clinic that I'm going to hopefully be starting the volunteer work with within the next month, I was so grateful. It's not the same clinic I did my externship at because they have enough employees. But this clinic is more than willing to accommodate me, and I'm just thankful for the opportunity because it is very difficult to establish yourself in any position in a veterinary clinic if you don't have experience, and it's hard to gain experience when no one will give you a chance. So, volunteer opportunity, I was jumping on it because I'm just ready to put some of these theories that I've been reading about into use.
Well, and hopefully, you know, like I said before, hopefully you go into this place and, you know, prove yourself and make them realize that, oh, this could be a really good asset for our team. So hopefully that pans out for you. I really hope it does.
Yeah, and you know, we are, I mean, we say it all the time, we're in like a staffing crisis right now. Like, we are not in the position to be turning any qualified person away. Like, we need the help, and if I don't care who you are, if you can do the job, like, I can't imagine why anybody is being turned away at this point in time. But so hopefully, again, you know, hopefully that also helps to work to your advantage in that maybe there's more opportunities available, and hopefully there will be than there was even, you know, a couple years ago, really.
Yeah, there's like one in four Americans has some form of disability. So, knowing that I wanted to go into veterinary medicine and was told no, I wonder how many of the other one in four were told no because of their disabilities. Because, like, with the staffing crisis for veterinary technicians, it doesn't really seem like you should be telling people no. Just give them a chance to prove they can do it or can't. I mean, it's up to them, and we know better than anyone what we're capable of. If we think we can do it, at least give us a chance.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, there are hospitals out there. I know there are that are going to be accommodating to somebody with people in your condition or just any other disability. Just to speak from my time in Austin, there is a deaf technician that works with the oncology department, and most of the oncology department now knows at least some remedial sign language, and they also have like laminated pieces of simple things that could be used for sign language. So there are opportunities for you. Just have, I mean, you just have to find the right one that will be supportive of you and recognize your your abilities that you can do things.
Yeah, I read this really neat article, and I'll send you the link for it. There is this vet tech in, I think, Denver, Colorado, who has macular degeneration. And, I mean, there's some things that she's limited to, but she can do blood draws and all that by tactile sensation, by feeling the vein and all that. And,
Wow. What is macular degeneration?
Like,
can't really see that well.
Blindness. Yeah.
Her name is, I think, Sarah Sharp, and I'll get you the link to that article.
Yeah, get us the article.
Yeah, would love to read that, and maybe even reach out to her. Yeah.
Well, I mean, honestly, most of the time, there's a lot of times where I can't see the vein either. So.
The AVMA has a good article called "Ableism in Veterinary Medicine." And it talks about a veterinarian, Brandy Duhon, who lost both of her hands due to meningitis, I believe. And she's still an instructor of shelter medicine.
Okay. Yeah, get us those links. We'd be happy to share that stuff.
And I think, again, it comes down to, you know, education of owners and managers and that, again, as you said, Sandra, like, disability does not equal, you know, incapability, and that, you know, yeah, there might be limitations, but there's, I'm sure, 90%, if not more, of what goes on in a veterinary clinic that people with your disability or this disability or that disability, like, they've obviously in many ways been adapting to it to their whole life. They are just as equipped and able to do it as many are.
I agree. And I think that if the field felt more safe for people with disabilities, a lot of technicians who are in the field currently and have, I don't want to say invisible disabilities, but like the ones that you can't actually see, would feel more open about talking to those with the people they work with. Because when I first got your email back about being on the podcast, I posted in a couple of my vet tech groups and found out that there are a lot of people out there who have issues like fibromyalgia and Crohn's disease, who are made to feel like they're lazy because they're just not able to do certain things some days. And I mean, even though you can't see those disabilities, they're still there.
They're still there. Yeah.
Well, and those are also harder to deal with because you can't see it. And we talked to Dana Provost about that, and she's like, people can't see that. Yeah, I'm spent because of what I have going on internally. Not that I'm lazy. It's that I just don't have the energy for it.
You know, looking at, you know, we were just talking about, you know, how you found the clinic and staff to be accommodating. I'd be curious, you know, thinking back to your initial experience with that first vet tech program you applied to and hospitals out there, what would be your suggestion or suggestions to practice managers or vet tech programs that have applicants that are disabled? And maybe they're, as you mentioned, you know, if you have an applicant that is able to walk and one that's not, but they're equally qualified and can do all the same things, they're going to choose the applicant that can walk. Like, what would be your suggestion to these clinics or these programs that have these applicants to, I don't know, maybe not be so scared of those applicants? I don't know if that's the right term, or think that it's this monumental change or shift that you have to do. I'd be curious your input on that.
My biggest thing is give them a chance to prove themselves. We know what we're capable of. If we're capable of doing the same tasks, we deserve the chance to prove ourselves. Don't make us work 10 times harder to prove ourselves just as capable as someone who can walk. That's not fair to us. And it's really just, I don't want to cuss, but a shitty attitude to have.
Yeah, no,
you can cuss here.
Because in the long term, you're hurting your clinic because you're missing out on a chance to really get to know someone and just see what kind of person and vet tech or veterinary staff in general they can be. I mean, we have some very unique skills that a lot of clinics could benefit from.
Yeah.
Like, if you're working with a fearful animal, they like to hide under my wheelchair, so you could easily give them a shot while they're hiding under my wheelchair.
Yeah. Use it to your advantage, yeah, right?
Exactly. I've been doing that my entire life. And if you have someone who is in a wheelchair working in your clinic, I implore you to invest in the liftable exam tables, the ones mm-hmm. that raise and lower, because yeah. my dog's personal vet has those, and those things are so amazing. Yeah. And not just for people yeah. in wheelchairs, yeah. like for all your staff, because they don't have to injure their backs trying to get these heavy dogs up there.
You are preaching Oof. To the choir. I am very yeah. tall, and so for me, like you used the microscope example earlier, and obviously I didn't want to compare, but you know, like lowering, you know, bending myself all the way down to the microscope or to the treatment sinks or to the, you know, the treatment counters or what have you. I mean, after nearly 30 years now, my back barks every day from the opposite, from bending mm-hmm. all the way down to the standard clinic tables. But whenever I was working either relief or in a clinic that had a liftable table, I always went to that exam room or to that specific table to bring yep. it up to my height.
Yep.
But then of course, you know, my shorter coworkers, you know, didn't like that. And I was often over there on my own island anyway. But again, you know, it's just that it's a very simple change that, you know, ultimately, you know, it's another tiny thing that leads to greater longevity in the field. Like, you know, the physical toll this field takes on you is real over the course of your career, and whatever, you know, ergonomics even that you can do to mitigate some of that. Like I don't know why we don't do more of that. I really don't.
Well, and that shouldn't, that shouldn't just be for no, disabled people. That should be for
everyone, because the staff at large. And oof. And then when you make that change for your staff at large, then it's much easier to incorporate yeah. and accommodate those with disabilities, because you already have some of those things in place, or you're already kind of looking at that, looking through that lens.
Sandra, you mentioned those lift tables. Yesterday, the shift that I worked, we had an 80-kilogram Irish wolfhound that needed a CT. I am so thankful that the CT table lowered to it came down to about a foot and a half off the floor. Still had to do some lifting, but oh man, if we had to lift that dog up onto the table, I'd be doing this interview lying down with the heating pad on my yeah. back, because just the thought of that. And they're like, "Can you help with this?" I'm like, "Oh, yes."
Yeah, yeah, the yeah. modifications you make for disabled yeah. people can actually help all the members of your clinic.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know a veterinarian here locally. Back in the day when I first started, it was really before corporatization of veterinary medicine. One of our sister hospitals that was in the same city, really just a mile or two away from the hospital I worked at, as he got older, not because of any disability, but I think just he was a taller guy and his back had been bending down, but he started lowering his surgery table and doing surgery sitting down just for his own comfort. And I remember thinking, you know, and he was kind of even viewed by some of the other veterinarians at the time, like, what are you doing? You're lazy, or you're not tough, or you're this or that. And I look back at that and I think, like, wow, that guy was so far ahead of the curve. Like, why do we continue to make ourselves uncomfortable? Why don't we, like, if you're going to be sitting at that operating table for, you know, hours on end, whether it's one surgery or multiple surgeries coming in and out, like, I understand, like, the sterile field, and there's probably some other things you have to kind of consider in that respect, but, like, why do we just continue to have this mentality of not making our workspace comfortable? anyway, continue. I'm sorry.
So Sandra, you know, as you're kind of starting out on your career, what are you hoping to do? Like, what type of practice do you want to work in? Do you want to work in general practice? Do you want to work in ER? Do you want to work with surgery technicians? What are you looking to do?
I think that I really want to, well, I'll start in at this practice and see how it goes. But I was doing this webinar for Penn Foster, because we have to have, I think, 15 hours of live webinars. And there was this one technician who talked about working with neonates. And it sounds terrifying, but it also sounds extremely interesting.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
That's great.
For sure. I know a good friend of ours, Dave Kelly Foltz, she does a lot of lecturing on neonatal care. And which, you know, obviously, like, we do C-sections and stuff all the time, especially on the emergency side, but it is a very unique skill set and a very unique type of patient. Absolutely.
Yeah. At one point I thought about, not to offend the two of you, but I thought about emergency and critical care, but that just sounds terrifying.
No offense. It's like, you know, there's honestly so many segments of veterinary medicine that are just not for people. Like, there are people that are averse to eyes, anesthesia, surgery. You know, I really detest neurology and anything to do with neurologic type patients. They're just, again, physically demanding, and you know, those with seizure disorders and what have you that are, you know, they're their own niche of patients. And I think that has to be, like, we as a profession have to make that okay. And like, I think sometimes we look at that as like, you're not this well-rounded, you know, you can't do jack of all trades, you can't do everything in this field, so you can't be in this field. And there are some amazing, amazing technicians out there. You know, Liz Houston talks all the time about her aversion to anesthesia, and look at all she's done in this field. I mean, like, they're like, you do not have to be able to do everything all of the time. Like, if you don't, like, I also don't like dentistry. Like, there's going to be somebody in your practice that loves that thing you don't, and like, play to that, like, allow that to be, allow those people in your practice to shine in those areas that they really like, and gravitate away from the ones that they don't. Like, your staff and your patients will only benefit from that, truly.
Yeah. When I was teaching, I would always ask my students, what do you want to go into? What is your... And obviously, I would gravitate to the ones that wanted emergency, but half of them had no idea what they wanted to do. They just wanted to be involved in the profession, and there's nothing wrong with that.
You kind of find your footing, when you're actually out in it. And, you know, even in emergency and critical care, towards the end of my career, I was really no longer interested in emergency, but more into critical care. Like, I really didn't want to be in the ER. I wanted more to be in the ICU. And, you know, the Tufts was, you know, very much mostly accommodating to that. I worked very few ER shifts in the end, as opposed to being in ICU, just because I felt like that was more where I was at that point in my career. I was a lot better. The ER was far more physical than the ICU was. And I enjoyed the critical thinking aspect, as opposed to the, you know, the running and gunning and thinking on your feet and going as ER. So, you know, there are absolutely those kinds of things. And like, if you're just starting out in the field, like, I think working at a general practice is the best, because you do the dentistry, you see the eye cases, you see the neuro cases, you see the medicine cases.
You do get well-rounded there.
You get very well-rounded. You see lots of things, and then you can kind of start, you know, after a year, a couple of years, whatever, you find where you're gravitating towards. And, you know, I think for both of us, you know, we found where it was supposed to be, but Sandra, I believe you will too. I mean, it's, and that evolves. I mean, you know, as you go through your career, you're not locked into ECC the entire time. You can move to medicine or, you know, surgery or wherever it is. Like, I think that's something that's forgotten as well, is that it's okay to pivot as you more or less do everything you can in one area, and all of a sudden something else interests you. Yeah.
When I think the people that pivot, like people that, you know, switch it up, they last longer in the field because they're more engaged. They're not doing the same thing over and over again. Sandra, you'll figure all this out as you get going.
Yeah. Honestly, that's part of the excitement is find your nerd, finding what path it is that you know, or those patients that you really gravitate towards. And I mean, looking at all the specialties now, Dave, you know, not even just specialties, but all of the different practices and everything that you can do now. Again, this is the time, because there's more opportunities now than there ever have been. And hopefully that just continues.
Mm.
So, Sandra, we're getting close to our hour. But I want to make sure, like, is there anything that we haven't brought up or discussed yet? Anything we haven't covered about your particular, you know, path moving forward, you being in the technician program, or what you're looking to do with your career, or career advice for anybody that may be listening that does have a disability that you'd like to offer? What have we not talked about that you want to get across?
Sure. I just want anyone with a disability to know that it's okay to let people know what your disability is. Even if they can't see it, they should still know. That way you can get the help that you need in your clinic or in school. Like I said, the ADA is really amazing in helping with that, and your college will have its own ADA that you can look to for help. And they, my Penn Foster's ADA actually called me last week, because even though I'm still in the third semester, I'm already trying to prepare for the externship at the end of my fourth semester, and that's the one where we work with large animals. And I had reached out to them, and they contacted me back last week to see what we could do. And they're like, you can work with the mini cows, the mini horses, donkeys, whatever, as long as it is equine and bovine, it does not matter. So just really reach out to them and ask for help. You're not any less of a technician if you have a disability.
Very true. Very true. And, yeah, use those resources, and they're there for a reason. And practice owners, practice managers, same thing. Like, you don't have to have all the answers. There are those people that you can reach out to for that information, for those answers, but utilize your resources. Absolutely.
And Sandra, is there a person or maybe a topic that you would like us to explore on a future upcoming episode of the Vet Tech Cafe?
There's this vet tech that I have followed on Facebook and now TikTok for a long time. He is hilarious. His name is Walter Brown.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We know about Walter.
He is hilarious. I would like to see, and he is really involved in a lot of the associations. So I would like to hear what he has to say.
Okay.
Awesome. Noted. Well, and now, Sandra, it's time for your would you rather question. Are you ready for it?
Sure.
And I know you're an avid listener, so I know you know the deal now. You get to pick one, two, or three.
Let's go with two.
Number two. Okay. I'm not sure if this is gonna hit in your wheelhouse, because you may not know who this person is.
Oh, no.
Because you're probably younger than we are.
I'm 30.
Okay. So, all of your favorite movies still exist, but every role in these movies is played by Adam Sandler. Or only Adam Sandler movies exist and anyone can play those roles.
I think I'm going to have to go with all Adam Sandler movies, but other actors can play in them. Because as much as I love Adam Sandler, I would not want to see him in every movie that I watch.
that's fair.
Like, the thing that came to my mind was like, I want to watch him in Titanic. Playing either role.
I could imagine Adam Sandler as Rose.
Yeah. Or Top Gun as Maverick, or
yeah. He's actually one of my few like celebrity encounters. He was from New Hampshire, and he lived in Manchester, New Hampshire, where I worked for about 20 years, and he actually used our clinic for one of his dogs. So he's my one celebrity encounter.
Oh, wow.
Imagine Adam Sandler playing Baby in Dirty Dancing.
There's so many. Yeah. There's so many.
Oh, options. My gosh. Yeah, the possibilities are truly endless.
Yes, they really are.
Well, Sandra, thank you so much for your time and for reaching out to us to discuss all this. We really, really appreciate it. Again, as we said at the outset, this is probably something we wouldn't have thought to have this discussion, number one. Number two, wouldn't have known anybody to discuss it with. And we try not to put out a call, you know, hey, we want to talk about this. Who wants to talk about it? We thankfully get a lot of listeners that that write in to discuss these very things. So we really, really, really appreciate it. Definitely get those links over to us. We would love to include them in the show notes. Best of luck with, you know, your completion of your education with Penn Foster and your journey through the profession. I do hope it's both accommodating and rewarding, because it really can be an amazing place. But best of luck to you as you embark and finish up on school, because I know that's an exciting but also nerve-wracking time. So thank you very much, and we really, really enjoyed it.
I appreciate the opportunity.
All right, Caffeinators. Well, you guys take care. Happy New Year, and we will see you back here in another couple of weeks with another great episode. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Hello, Caffeinators. We wanted to thank Dog Days Consulting for managing our social media and helping with the interior design here at the Vet Tech Cafe. They don't just do social media. They can help you identify your brand through brand coaching. The founder is a CVPM with 15 years experience in veterinary practice management. They are a small business proudly serving the veterinary community, and we are thrilled to be working with them. Check them out at www.dogdaysconsulting.com. Hey, caffeinators! We would like to thank you for listening to the Vet Tech Cafe podcast today. As everybody is well aware by now, we often talk about difficult issues that face our profession. In addition, we chat with colleagues and leaders in our field who have strong opinions of these issues. Those opinions expressed by either Dave or Jeff as the hosts, or those opinions expressed by our guests, are their opinions alone and do not represent any other person, business, institution, or any other entity inside or outside of the scope of veterinary medicine. If you have any questions relating to this, please email us at vettechcafe@gmail.com or visit our website, www.vettechcafe.com. Lastly, whatever platform you utilize to hear our dulcet tones, please rate and review our podcast and like and follow our Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn pages as well to see what we're up to. From all of us at the Vet Tech Cafe, have yourself a great day.